And thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants will be in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. And to ask a question at that time, please press star then one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And now I'd like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Denise Merle, Secretary of the State.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us on our conference call, which we're hoping will be very helpful and useful to those of you on the call. I'm joined by Peggy Reeves and Ted Bromley, and I'm getting the impression as I go around the state to different offices that most of you probably know these people. And I thank you very much for all the compliments I've gotten on our staff. I know we're trying very hard to address all the issues that are coming up. And the point of this call is that, you know, you will have a chance first to listen to what we're going to tell you about preparing for an election and supervised absentee ballots, which is the topic of today's conference call. But at the end, you'll have a chance to ask questions, and hopefully everyone can hear the same answer at the same time. We have a large volume of calls coming into our office. We're doing our very best to answer every one of your questions. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Peggy, I guess, is going to start, and we'll save time at the end for questions and answers. Should last about an hour, I believe. So thanks very much.
Good afternoon. Thanks for all being on board with us. As you can imagine, this has been quite a week for us. We did receive some direction from the court yesterday on how to proceed with the printing of our absentee ballots. And so Ted has been working diligently with the printers to make sure that those ballots are available in the town clerk's office on Friday, October 5th. And the town clerks will be receiving their grids today. Mm-hmm. Ted, is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
So that we can proceed on that. As you are aware, we were sued by the state Republican Party, and the court has determined that the Republican Party will have the top line of the ballot, and so we will be proceeding in that manner. But we're here to talk about preparing for the election, to go through the dates that we have in the calendar, to go through the things that you are, I'm sure, already started doing to prepare for the election, and to take any of the questions that you have. And we're also going to touch a little bit on the supervised absentee balloting procedure that we have in our state. So I'm joined here by Ted Bromley, and I think we'll start by going through the election calendar, and we'll begin that way. Thanks.
So hello, everyone. Good afternoon. So, yes, it's been a whirlwind tour that we've had going on here, and if anybody has any specific questions about the court case or the ballot or ballot order or anything like that, we can take it after Peggy and I do our little blurb here. But so I think probably the best thing to do is to just highlight some of the relevant dates that are fast approaching in the election calendar. A date that has just gone by, September 21st, was the date when your town clerks were very busy making military and overseas ballots available. And although it does not affect your lives all that much, I do get a phone call from many of you every once in a while about what do I do with this federal postcard application, what does it mean, et cetera. So you do have a role in it, definitely. So that deadline, September 21st, has come and gone, and the clerks did a great job ensuring that those went out on time, because we always have the Department of Justice looking over our shoulder on that. The next relevant deadline is October 5th, and again, Peggy mentioned that a little bit, when regular absentee ballots become available. And again, I know that's more of a town clerk issue, but with the tight time frame and turnaround that we have with our court case, you may see your town clerk scrambling and or asking for your assistance with ballot and ballot setup, because that deadline is fast approaching. And incidentally, in the court's decision, they did not give us any type of waiver with regard to that deadline. So October 5th is still the deadline for absentee ballots to become available. In terms of ballot access, we do have one more date for ballot access, October 23rd, which is 14 days prior to an election, is the final day that somebody can register as a write-in candidate with our office. And once we gather those on that deadline, we will send each town that has a registered write-in candidate a notice with regard to who those registered write-in candidates are. So be on the lookout for that, so that if you have registered write-ins or people do write-in candidates on your ballot, that you make sure that you do count them and credit those candidates a vote.
I'm going to jump back,
sure.
Actually, sorry, to October 5th before Ted goes forward, because I want to talk a little bit about that's the last day that you can determine your polling places for the election. So you know that your polling places can only be changed after that date if the polling place becomes unusable, some emergency, some reason why you can't use it, and then you and your town clerk have to unanimously agree that that is the case, and you have to let us know, and you have to designate another polling location and publish that change, obviously, with your voters.
And Peggy was right. I was working off of one list, which is my highlights list, but going back to the election calendar, October 16th would be the last day for you to appoint election officials, and I think that perhaps I might have been overzealous in our latest newsletter, and we were talking about the appointment of poll workers when, in fact, I should be really talking about unofficial checkers in that. So there's a little reminder there about us reminding candidates of their ability to appoint poll workers when, in fact, I was really trying to say unofficial checkers, so I do apologize about that. Let's see. October 20th, which is a Saturday, the Saturday of the third week before Election Day registration in all towns. Now, I know that in one of the ROVAC bills a couple of years ago, we did eliminate a lot of these mandatory voter registration sessions, but this one was one that was not eliminated, so that's still in play. For the registrars, okay. So October 23rd is the 14-day mail-in voter registration deadline. Now, we get a lot of phone calls about this. The deadline is for mail-in and for the postmark, but it no longer requires you to be in your office on that day. Of course, if it's your normal working day or whatever, that's fine. But the actual day that everyone is required to be in their office as the final voter registration deadline is now October 30th, which is the in-person voter registration day, 7 days before the election. So I know there's some confusion out there every once in a while about that. So the 14-day deadline, so if somebody wants to mail a card into your office, they still have to do it by the 23rd or get it postmarked by the 23rd. But the 30th is the day that you all have to be in your office for the deadline. And just bear with me as I'm going through my list here. Okay. A couple of other special deadlines are the special military voter registration deadline, which is November 5th at 5 p.m., so that is the day before the election, and that is a special extended voter registration deadline for military personnel who have been released from service within the calendar year. So we take that very literally. So if they were released from service, you know, 6-8 months ago, they can still take advantage of that extended deadline. November 5th is also the deadline for individuals whose qualifications as to age, citizenship, or residence was obtained since the in-person deadline. So basically, from the sixth day before the election to the day before, if somebody just moved into your town, just became a U.S. citizen, just turned 18, they would be allowed during this time frame to register to vote, even though the in-person deadline had already passed, and that is also 5 p.m. And the final couple of deadlines, which again really apply to the clerks, but you should know about them just in case somebody asked you, is November 5th is the deadline to apply for and for the town clerks to issue an absentee ballot. Connecticut, unlike some states, does not have a statutorily prescribed deadline, like you must get your absentee ballot no later than X day. The only thing our statute says is that the town clerks cannot issue an absentee ballot on election day unless it's an emergency or something. So therefore, by sort of practical or de facto deadline is the day before. And then, of course, the deadline for returning that absentee ballot would be the close of the polls on election day, November 6th. Let me see if we have anything else. Unofficial checkers. Deadline for town chairman or candidate to designate unofficial checkers is Sunday, November 4th at 6 a.m. because the statute says no later than 48 hours. If your town is one of those towns that actually has unofficial checkers, it might benefit you to reach out to the town chairman and let them know and possibly get it on in the Friday before, because we always get the phone call about, well, Ted, I got in on Monday and there was a page slipped underneath my door. How do I know when I got it? Well, to avoid all of that, if your town is one of those that uses unofficial checkers, and those of you out there who do know it, you might want to convey that to your town chair that perhaps they can get that list to you on Friday. It's easier for everybody. Let me see if there's anything else in terms of the election calendar that I want to point out. So just bear with us a second. Okay,
I'm going to jump in on a few things, and then I'm sure Ted will jump in too. So first, I'm just going to go through some practical things that I'm sure are on your to-do list, and you're probably already doing, but just to remind you. So you know that you're going to have to get your memory cards programmed, and we are talking about 4 cards per district, not 3. There was some rumor going around that 3 was permissible. It's 4 we're talking about. And then also, in addition, you're getting together with your counterpart and figuring out how many ballots you want to order. And you're going to give us on a prescribed form the number of ballots that you will be ordering. Those have actually already started coming in. You're going to look at some historical turnout from like elections. So obviously you're not going to look at last year. You're going to look at 4 years ago for a presidential election and previous presidential elections to see what your turnout is like and how many ballots you will need. So you're going to be getting those forms to us. You're also going to let us know the polling places and the moderators for those polling places. I'm sure you've already started recruiting your workers. You're going to be setting your training dates and sending confirmation letters out to them to set that up. You're going to obviously, if you're using buildings within town, make sure that whatever facility forms you have to fill out to make sure that they are available for you. If you need to get in the night before to start setting things up, you have to make sure that those will be open for you. So you need to make sure you get names of the custodians for all of that. You're going to schedule a central count absentee ballot location if you need that. And I want to talk a little bit about workers, because in a presidential year, we always have the issues with hiring enough election officials. So you know that you have one moderator, you have one, at least one, but not more than 2 checkers for each line of electors. You have 2 assistant registrars if the registrars will not be on duty at the polling place. So if you have more than one polling district in your town, the registrars are supposed to be in their offices. And then you have assistant registrars who would perform the duties of the registrars at the polling place. You're going to have at least one, but not more than 2 tabulator tenders. And I think most towns actually just use 1 tabulator tender. And you're going to have at least one, but not more than 2 ballot clerks. So I think the most important thing that I could say to you and what will happen in a presidential election is the turnout is going to be huge. So if there's one place where you need to be hiring more workers than any other position, it's your checkers. Because you're going to have to think about the fact that if you're going to have at least twice the turnout, then you're going to have lots of check-in lines. So if normally, for example, you had everybody check in A through Z in one line, you know in a year like this, you're going to have at least two or three lines. If you normally have two or three lines, you're going to have four, five, or six lines because you're going to have to accommodate the number of people who will be coming in and standing in line. And the last thing we want is to have telephone calls where people say, I had to wait in line for 2 hours to be checked in. So obviously that's where you want to be able to hire more workers than even you think you might need, but just certainly for your checkers to get those lines moving smoothly through. The statute also permits you to hire challenges, but does not require it, and I believe it's one or two challenges for each polling place. Demonstrators, you don't have to appoint, but you can appoint up to two if you decide to do that. And because, you know, the very first time you used the tabulator, we had to have demonstrators, but we don't anymore. So that's optional, but I know that sometimes people hire those demonstrators because they use them to help facilitate everything that's going on in the polling place, to make it easier to tell people, you know, to line up according to the name of their street or however you do your lineup. And so they're certainly helpful to hire them, to have them there, even though they're not technically sitting at your demonstrator table. Obviously, you're going to have a head moderator who could be one of your polling place moderators, but he or she could also be somebody who just comes in at the end of the night and gets the his or her main purpose is to determine and declare the election results for your town. So that's how you would use your head moderator. And again, if you going back to the number of election officials you hire, you're always permitted to hire two shifts. So you don't have to require anybody work all day. They can come in at 6 in the morning and work till about 1, and then you have your second shift come in. And many towns do that just because it's a very long day, and that works out for them. And I guess anything else, Ted?
Yeah, I think that, and Peggy can jump in as well, but along with the poll workers and your preparation, we were at the Hartford County ROVAC meeting, the day before.
Tuesday.
And at that time, the legislature was hearing our regulations, emergency regulations, and they actually passed them. So basically, as we have all told you, because they passed them, you now have 6 months with which to adopt your own, or by default, you will be deemed to have adopted ours. And the only reason I bring that up now is because I think it's important as you're planning for these things to also think of those situations that can happen and what happens when you have a large turnout. Look, historically we've had around an 80% turnout, and I don't think that's exaggerating. I think last presidential was 78.9 or something. So, you know, we're talking an 80% turnout. So with large turnouts, the system is stressed, and so those sort of weak points become vulnerable. And not only that, is for those of you who did a great job of living through 2011, you know that the weather can come into play, and so far we've had great weather, so, you know, knock on wood, we will be fine. But you need to think about those things. You know, do you have a few extra poll workers that, even though you haven't appointed them, you can call upon them, even if you're not going to officially deem them? You know, think of those type of things. You know, even if your emergency plan is not in place, which we hope you will at least have considered it by November, you know, are there generators? Are there emergency backups? Are there flashlights? Are there things around your town that you can easily obtain should something happen? Because it was one thing to deal with that disaster with a 30% turnout. It's another to deal with that with an 80% turnout. So I think that it would be good to think about those things as well.
Yeah, Ted raises a very good point because, and as we told the Harford County meeting on Tuesday, that so even though you do have 6 months to prepare your emergency plan, as Ted says, we would really encourage you all to sit down now before this election just to come up with answers to those possible scenarios, things that could possibly go wrong, and just have it on paper, as Ted says, to get some extra people hired just in case people call in sick or people can't make it to the polls because of a storm or whatever it is. So we'd encourage you all just to sort of jot something down, even though you haven't formally prepared your emergency plan.
So I think the last thing that I want to talk about is just a few questions. I know Arthur covered supervised absentee balloting at the last conference, and he and I were actually co-teaching in the same room. I think he did a great job. I want to just bring up a couple of things that we've gotten follow-up questions about. The first about supervised balloting is there's really three categories of it. There is the less than 20 electors type of supervised absentee balloting, which is the permissive type. There is the mandatory supervised absentee balloting, which is an institution which has 20 or more registered voters in it. And then there is the third category, which the legislature recently added, which is the category where the registrar, you, have the discretion to make it a supervised balloting location if the town clerk receives 20 or more applications from the same address. And so those are the three categories. The permissive, the less than 20 registered voters, requires the registrar to actually, if an administrator of an institution requests it, then requires the registrar to reach out and to make accommodations, etc. The mandatory, which many of you are probably more familiar with, is where you know that there are 20 more registered voters in an institution and you actually have to supervise the vote there. So in those instances, you should be reaching out to the administrator and making those arrangements soon if you haven't already done that. And then finally, the sort of more than 20 applications from an institution. That one is going to require the registrars to actually communicate rather well with your town clerk because of the fact that is only triggered when there are 20 or more applications received from a town clerk. The interesting thing about it is that until the town clerk receives 20, the town clerk is required under a different section of the law to turn around those applications for absentee ballot and issue a ballot within 24 hours. So if the town clerk has received, you know, 5 or 6 from an apartment complex, we don't assume that the town clerk will have a crystal ball and say, well, I only have 6 now, I know I'm going to get 20. So, of course, they have to turn those around, and they have to issue absentee ballots within 24 hours. But when we start to get close to the 20 mark, and you think as registrars that you are going to designate that location as a supervised balloting location, you need to communicate with the clerk to let them know, because as far as the clerk knows, the only thing they know is that within 24 hours they have to mail out a ballot. So that's going to require some extensive communication and also, you know, some thought on the part of the registrars in terms of which apartment complexes or institutions that is going to be designated with. You know, if you have an apartment complex of, you know, all 20-year-old recent college grads, I'm sure that that's probably not a place where you want to institute supervised absentee balloting. But so anyways, I just wanted to bring up a couple of points on there, and also to a reminder that, you know, the IVS system is in play for this election. So, therefore, check your phone lines. We have already provided many of the candidates to IVS, so they have already started programming, and then we will give to you a detailed schedule, as we have in the past, of when you can call in and listen to your ballot, et cetera. We try to proof as many of the candidate pronunciations as we can. Some of the state reps, you know, we may not rightly know the pronunciation. You may know better, especially some of the very local races. But we try to proof as many as we can to help you out. But we will send out a detailed timeline for that. But make sure that your phone lines are installed, and if you in your town, if you turn them off, you know, make sure you at least have them turned on. That stuff you can do now in preparation.
The other thing I wanted to add is that obviously you know you're going to be preparing for the pre-election testing of your voting machine, so you're going to need a test deck, and this all has to be done at least 10 days before the election. And I'm sure all of you who have been through this know how to do that, but, you know, just a reminder that that will be something that will be coming up in the next month. So, all right. So I think we're going to actually end our discussion here and open it up for questions from all of you, because there may be things that we missed or you want to talk about or further detail on what we have discussed so far. Thank you.
To ask a question at this time, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name when prompted. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment for the first response, please. Mary Ridingsworth, your line's open.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for the conference call today. We've been working on the IBS station, making sure that we have it all tested and properly prepared for Election Day. And this summer, during the primary, the issue came up about the IBS ballot. And so I would like to hear a little bit about who's responsible for making sure that IBS has the full ballot that should be on the election. Thank you.
Sure. The registrars of voters are responsible for that. We will actually send the printers and to you, or to your town, mostly to the town clerk, the list of candidates that we're responsible for. And in most instances, the printers do try to be helpful and send to IVS your ballot information. But if you have any questions about it, you should always touch base with them.
So, Ted, can you point me at some time to the statute where we're responsible for that ballot? I would just like to be a little more clear on the time frame and what our responsibility is. And you could bet after the call if you'd like.
Absolutely. I'd be more than happy to email it to you, but just in general speaking, the registrars are responsible for the ballot setup. The town clerks are responsible for absentee ballots, and so absentee ballots must reflect the polling place ballots, but the registrars are responsible for the polling place ballots and their availability, and of course, the IBS system is just an extension of that. It's a valid ballot.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Another question?
The next question will come from Sam Carmody. Please unmute your phone. I believe the next question is from Sam Carmody. Okay, we'll take the next question from Krista Kott.
Hi. I was wondering, we're from a small town in Easton, and we've kind of gone by that the the deputy registrars are at the polls, and we're just kind of, I like to be there, but we're there in the background. What if we only have one polling place? What are our duties?
What are your duties at the polls, or what?
I didn't
get the question. I'm sorry.
Okay, at the polls. Okay. When we came on, we've been here a couple of years, we were told that since we have one polling place, and so the deputy registrars, they're just below the moderator at the polling place, and we have always we've been at the polling place, but we have kind of, let them handle it.
Yeah.
What is, as now we know that we are definitely allowed to be there, it's been written, what, you know, if we're there, do we, are we above the deputy registrars? You know, what are our, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, if you are appointing assistant registrars at the polls.
Okay.
And then you are also there at the polls, that's first probably a little overkill unless you're just going there to see what's going on and then you may be leaving and going back and forth. So in reality, the duty that you would be assuming is that of the assistant registrars at the polls, which is basically their job is to act on your behalf at the polls. So if there is a restoration to be done or something to do with a voter's ability to appear on the list or a transfer, those are the sort of tasks that your assistant registrars are doing.
Yeah, I just, it's one of those things where it sounds like a really remedial question, but I do enjoy being at the polls. I really do. I love it. And I have, in the past, we've been in and out. I mean, you know, for different reasons, going back to the office. But I just want to know, if we chose to stay the whole day, you know, what would our assistant registrars do at that point?
Right.
You know.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's kind of a duplicative thing. I mean, that's what
yeah.
the assistant registrars are there for.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we'll keep on doing what we've been doing.
Yeah, just the only thing I would say is that if you're going to be at the polls, just make sure that somebody is available at the office so that in case we or another town need to get a hold of you for any reason, that somebody is there to pick up the phone.
All right. Well, we will. Thank you.
Thanks. Next question.
Next question will come from Paula Hopewell.
Yes, hello. My question has to do with the court ruling. I understand that the cross-endorse candidates were not included when the court looked at the number of votes received by the Democratic governor. Is that correct? And what I want to know is, I'm a head moderator, what I want to know is that when we've had the unknown tally at the end of the night, I believe that the people that have been voted by both, you know, the Democrat loop and the working family loop, if they're both filled in, credit has all gone to the Working Family Party. So how did they know how many of those working family votes actually could have been simultaneously votes for the Democratic Party? Did I ask that clearly enough?
No, it's a great question. So the first thing is that, so for the court case, basically what they said is that the votes for Governor Malloy as a Democrat and
yep.
Governor Malloy as working family could not be added together
right.
to determine who got the top line. So it had really nothing to do with the cross-endorsement, so to speak. It really had more to do with a reading of a statute which determines the ballot order. But with regard to your question, it is a great one, and actually the legislature fixed that or attempted to address it
right.
in 2011 or 10, one of the two, where they actually put a formula in the statute now about how to attribute those unknown votes. And in our recent newsletter to the registrars, we actually put a link to an online little widget / application that will help you, will actually calculate it for you
right.
as to which party gets attributed the unknown votes, because unlike in the past where it was just it's sort of administrative decision to allocate them all to the minor party, it's not that way under the new formula in the statute. It's more of a ratio
right.
now.
I understand that. I don't want to belabor it, but it in the past, those votes that were recorded for Malloy as working party, some of those people were, in fact, people who voted both Democrat and working family, correct? Because they would have been recorded as unknowns by the tabulator, right?
Yep,
but the Democratic Party didn't get any credit for those. So that's history, and I'm just wondering how the court just my experience visually looking at ballots when we've had recounts and things, many of those people would, in fact, have been considered overvotes that they voted for both parties. I don't know how in the world they could just unilaterally say they basically just discounted the fact that they could have been double votes.
You're right, they could have, but also in the analysis, we didn't think it was over 20,000. Because remember, Malloy only won by 6,000, and the difference between Malloy's vote total as a Republican, the vote total for the Democrat, was over 20,000 votes.
Okay.
So
I'm a very
would have had to have 20,000 unknown votes for the gubernatorial, which we just felt was unlikely.
Right. Well, I just want to put my voice out there. I am a mathematician by training. That's why I ask these really nitpicky questions. But even with this new app, there's really not going to be a way to sort out exactly what happened. I would voice the preference that in the future we should just report the unknowns as a separate line, because then you can accurately reflect exactly what happened at the polls. It just muddies the water to do any sort of allocation at all, and I think this new procedure is more accurate, but it still doesn't tell you exactly what the voters did. So I've had my 2 cents worth.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask you about that, okay?
Yep, sure. So just to be clear, though, for the other people that are listening, we can't do that because there's a statute that requires you to allocate them based on a formula. But it is certainly something that can be brought up to the legislature to see if they'd rather go to something like that rather than a formula. But
now,
for 2012, we're stuck with the formula.
I understand that. I'm just not there. I would much prefer, and I think it would be a far better thing, to really reflect what the voters did by maintaining the integrity of how many unknowns we had. Just my opinion.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
The next question will come from Catherine Palazzi from Andover.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Peggy. My question is, I need to replace two of my voting booths that have been broken, and I also need to replace the legs on my handicap machine. And my two questions are, how do I get this done? Where do I order them? And does the town is the town responsible for the cost?
Well, what I would do is first contact LHS, because I don't know how long the warranty is on those. I off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay.
If it's still under warranty, you may be able to get it replaced. However, if I were to guess, we've had them now for over 5 years, so I guess that probably the warranty is gone on them. But I don't know. And if not, then yes, the municipality would have to replace them at the local cost.
Okay. Thank you, Ted.
Sure.
One moment for the next question, please. Next question will come from Margaret Vale with Salisbury. From Salisbury, thank you. And Margaret Vale, your line is open.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. We have two questions. One, we might have missed it, but the form to report the number of ballots that we've ordered, the order for the ballots.
Yep.
Is that in our procedure manual, or do you send that out to us by email?
No, we've sent it out via email, and in fact, it was one that I sent out that said, please keep it around to apply to both the primary and the election. So,
so it'll be back.
It should be in your email. If not, shoot me an email, and I can forward it to you again.
Okay, thanks. And the other thing is, will the presidential ballots be statewide? Will they be printed for us?
We're finalizing the grids for you and send them out. We finalized the grid for that as well. It's with the printer, and we told them to turn that around ASAP. So those should be in the mail to you shortly.
Great. Thank you very much.
Oh, that is a great question. If I could, thank you for reminding me. The other thing is that I got a couple of phone calls about the provisional ballot and what ballot to be used. We also finalized an overseas ballot as well because, of course, again, we had to wait for the party order because there are parties on that. That provisional ballot, I'm sorry, that overseas ballot will be used by your town clerk for any overseas voters, but because it only has federal offices on it, it will also be given to you by the town clerk to be used as the provisional ballot. So unlike in August where you had to use a polling place ballot, you will have the provisional ballot again for use in November this time, and it will be coming to you from directly from the printer, as will the presidential ballot. So you can go on now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question is from Sal Bramante from Hartford.
Good afternoon, everyone. Quick question on the integrity form that has to be filled out. We know it's 31 days before, which is, in my calculation, October 5th. And because of the fact that Harper's doing this adjourned primary, we're a little behind right now in sense of identifying our ordering of our ballots as well as the moderator identification. Do we have a little leeway beyond the 31 days?
Yeah, I feel your pain.
I know. But we did okay in our – the Democrats did okay in that primary. I know.
Yeah, no, you guys are doing a good job. No, that's fine. That's fine. You officially have an extra couple of days for that.
Thank you very much. Oh, wait. What? Argo wanted to know who was the registrar who spoke regarding the unknown ballot, the unknowns that came out of the when it was cross endorsed. Which registrar was that?
I don't believe it was a registrar. I think it was a moderator.
It was a moderator.
Oh, it was a moderator.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. That's all we wanted to know. Thank you for your time, and we'll get it back to you right after the Columbus Day,
okay,
the integrity form. Okay. Thank you.
Nancy Conaway-Raska from Middletown.
Yes, hello. With regard to mandatory supervised balloting in a facility with more than 20 electors, is it the registrar's obligation to contact the facility, or do we need to receive a written letter from them?
So I think I may have just answered your email, Nancy. Did you contact me? It's Peggy.
Yes, but I'm still concerned. Is it we need to receive a written request from the facility?
No. If it's mandatory supervised voting in an institution, there's no discretion. You don't wait for an administrator to contact you. You have to have it there, and you have to set it up.
All right. Thank you, Peggy.
You're welcome.
Meta Hebert from Colton.
Hello, Ted and Peggy. Thank you again for having this conference call. It's very informational.
Good.
I have two questions for you. My first question is the in-person voter registration after the seven-day cutoff date on October 30th. Is the town clerk able to make new voters from October 30th to November 5th? Or is the in-person registration strictly before the registrars of voters?
That is a good question. I'm looking at my paperwork now. My initial reaction is that they are an admitting official. But let me see if I got anything else on that. But let me look, and I will try to get you an answer before we hang up. How's that?
That's fine. Okay. Now, my second question is in reference to advertising for the mandated sessions on October 20th and October 30th. Is the Secretary of the State's office going to publicize those sessions in the newspapers throughout the state, or does the individual town have to do it?
I think we usually do a press release about those,
yes.
But
I don't think we.
No, right.
Yeah, I mean, if it's picked up by the newspaper, certainly, and I know there may be radio announcements on it, but I think that many registrars actually do their own publicity. Sometimes they write a letter to the editor of a newspaper, even if it's only a weekly newspaper, but I think the individual registrars do a lot of publicity on their own in addition to whatever the state will be doing.
Okay, so in other words, what you're saying is that whatever the state does not replace the mandate for the individual towns to do their own.
Right, yes.
Okay, thank you so much. That's all the questions I had.
Thank you.
Louise Graver from Guilford.
Hi, everyone. I have a couple of questions also. The first is regarding any blank ballots that may have been issued by the town clerk. How are those ballots counted? When are they due back? And also, since they are going to military people, and since the blank ballots that were issued only had the names of the federal people on it, aren't those people being denied the right to vote for the local people?
Okay. So first of all, they're blank ballots, so that when they come back, as they have in the past, they will be counted by hand.
Yeah.
The second thing is the deadline to return them is close of the polls on election day. And the third is that those blank ballots are actually sent for three different categories of people. There is an overseas voter, meaning an expatriate, who last lived in your town before permanently moving and living overseas. That person, by federal law, is only allowed to vote for federal offices. The other two categories, the military and the people who are registered voters in your town but happen to be traveling overseas, are still registered voters, and although they get a blank ballot, they should have been sent by your clerk a full list of candidates with which they could write in on that ballot, and all of the candidates from president down to registrar of voters would be counted if written in on that ballot by the voter. So there's three categories, so it really has to be more specific as to which category you're talking about. And
I'm talking about the last category, but the only list of candidates that the town clerk had to send was the one that was received from you that contained federal offices only.
No, I personally sent that email. It had all of them. It had federal offices plus all the state reps and state senators. It had them all.
Okay. Did you send that to the registrar of voters also?
No, because the clerk is the one that issues those ballots.
Okay. So we have a problem along that line. The second question does relate to the town clerk. Reading the newsletter, which thank you very much, was very helpful, but reading the newsletter that came out, it looks to me like the town clerk really has absolutely no responsibilities after the close of polls in town hall. Everything is the responsibility of the registrar. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, yeah. That was a change that was advocated for by the Registrar of Voters Association in 2007, I think. So it's been like that for quite a few years. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. All right. Thank you.
Nancy Moore from Westbrook.
Yes, hello. I have a question about the limited registration session that is held on November 5th. The time says 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. I believe this is a change. It used to be 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., and the 5 p.m. was only for military.
Yep.
That's correct. It was changed a few years back, actually, Nancy. And so now it means that you do have to have somebody there until 5 p.m.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
If there are any final questions, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name when prompted. And to withdraw your request, you may press star 2. The next question will come from Annie Schweikert from Woodbury.
Yes, hello. I have a question about allowable media for these notices we have to send in, given the change in focus for that all publications are not paper. If one, there's an electronic newspaper that services our region and they accept notices, does that count as a notice, or do we, is a notice official only when it's in a print paper?
You know, that's a good question. Never been asked it before, but my sort of knee-jerk reaction is that, you know, the traditional print media is still what the legislature intended. I'm not sure that they, you know, when they wrote the statute back in whatever, the 60s or whatever, they were contemplating that. You know, perhaps it's something that we do bring up that you're allowed to do, you know, some online media, because I know that most people get it that way. But, you know, I think many of the statutes talk about a newspaper having a general circulation in the area, which to me would mean, you know, literally a circulation as opposed to an electronic format. So that's the best I can answer that at this point.
Thank you.
The last question I show is from Joan Broadhurst from Old Saybrook.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. The question I have is, I am the deputy registrar in Old Saybrook, and my registrar is just broke her hip last week, so I'm not sure if she's going to be available on Election Day, and I'm usually a moderator. Can I still be a moderator?
You're a moderator, but are you also the deputy registrar, did you say? I'm sorry.
Yes, I am.
So are you saying that you may be fulfilling the duties of the registrar because she's going to be unavailable, but you also want to be the moderator as well?
Yes.
You want to be the head moderator or the moderator that would be at the...
No, a moderator at one of our polling places.
I think it would be different if we were talking about a head moderator, because those duties only happen at the close of the polls, and that one might be a little easier of a question. But if you're actually the moderator at the polls, that's one duty, and then the registrars and or the assistant registrars arguably have other separate duties, and I'm not sure how you would really do both. I know that in the past we've hesitated to allow poll workers to fulfill two separate obligations on the same day. So I don't think that would be a good idea.
I agree as well. Just speaking as a former registrar, I really think that there are issues that may come up on Election Day, and the registrar may have to make either a ruling on or call us on, and so you would be precluded from doing that because you'd be at a poll during the day and may not know what's going on in the rest of the town.
So even though we do have two registrars?
Well, yeah, you have a Republican and a Democrat.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Just so, now how long can we wait before we would have to appoint a different moderator?
You have to appoint, let me see, I'm looking at the calendar. You have to appoint, I think it's 21 days, if I remember right. Last day to appoint election officials. No, that's election officials. Where's the moderator? It's in, I think it's in this one, Peggy.
Oh, okay.
October 16th, is that it?
Trying to look in the calendar here to see. I want to say it's 21 days, but for some reason I'm not able to find it really quickly. But there is a deadline for you to appoint these people.
Okay. Yeah, that was that morning, though. But he wasn't. He's not. He wasn't a registrar.
Yeah, I can't find it very quickly, but I'm going to say it's around 21 days that you have to appoint them.
Okay.
So you have, you know, a week or so
before
you have to make that decision.
Okay, thanks very much.
Sure. And then finally, if there's no are there more questions?
Okay.
Can I intervene? There's one question that I said I'd look up. I'm looking at 9-17, subsection B, that talks about the limited registration session with regard to age, citizenship, and it says, notwithstanding, for the registrars of voters shall hold the limited session on the last weekday before each regular election. So So the answer to Monita's question would be the registrar. So hopefully that
helps. Yeah, so not the clerks.
So not the clerks.
Okay, next question.
Next question will come from Viola Tusberry from New Hartford.
Hi, Viola.
Hi, Peggy. Hi, Ted.
Hi.
Back to supervised voting. You refer to institutions. What about an elderly housing complex that has 20 electors? Are we mandated to do supervised voting there?
Let me see. The term institution is defined, and it means a veterans health care facility, residential care home, health care facility for the handicapped, a nursing home, a rest home. I don't know if any of those fall into the category. Assisted living facility, a mental health facility, alcohol drug treatment facility, infirmary, living. So I think that it would probably fall into one of those. I don't think it's fairly broadly defined.
Yeah. Unless it's totally independent. If it's totally independent
it is.
That might be, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we get this question all the time about the sort of progressive care where in one wing is where people drive cars and are still able to come and go as they please, and then in another wing, it's, completely dependent care. And so in that case, we say, hey, listen, in the one wing, you should do the supervised balloting. In the other wing, where they're able to come and go, they can be going to the polls. I know that there are care facilities in between that as well. So I think it would be very fact-specific. I can't give you a general blanket answer on that.
This is fully independent. They're fully independent.
Okay, so if it's a fully, completely independent, they have their own cars, they come and go as they please, and it's just a, 55 and over or a, senior complex built where it's just apartments where they have their own cars and come and go, no, I wouldn't say that that's an institution. I think it's more of a care facility that they're looking at.
Thank you. Okay,
so
I'm sorry.
Next question is from George Cody from New Canaan.
Hi, George.
I wouldn't let you go without catching you once.
All right.
Now, my question is, looking at your latest newsletter, it says that there's going to be a series of newsletters, so I assume that we're going to be inundated with lots more information as the month goes on. My question is specifically, election night reporting. Are you going to be doing a newsletter totally dedicated to that? Because there's all kinds of questions of what forms are we using, and are we doing it online, or are we doing it offline, or...
Sure. I mean, I think if it's not in a newsletter format, we could certainly do a mailing on what we will, try to put together for that. Yeah, that's a fair question. Sure, we can... We could certainly put something like that together, George, yeah.
Yeah, and then on behalf of my head moderator, he loves to get those forms early.
Okay. All righty.
That's it.
Okay.
All right.
So I think that's all we have time for. So if there's anyone who didn't get a question answered, they can email Ted or me, and we'll surely answer you, I promise. So I want to really thank everybody for being on board this afternoon. We are all trying our best to get together for a very big election. It's always a very exciting time, but I know it can be very stressful. So we're here for you if you need any answers to your questions going forward in the coming weeks. This session will be recorded and available on our website within 48 hours. Ted, do you want to say anything to wrap up?
No, I just want to say thank you very much for participating, and hopefully this was helpful, and as always, we'll be here, to answer the questions, and we want to thank you all for bearing with us. It's been a completely overwhelming and stressful time for us in the past several weeks, not knowing what the several court cases were going to do, so, and I know some of you are still living through the aftermath of some of them, so... we appreciate that, and thank you very much for your patience on that regard.